one of my favorite subjects, today's episode is all about spinning yarns. Oh, sure, we'll tell some stories, but my guest today runs high-performance yarn manufacturing facilities and creates the building blocks for all things fabric-based, like gloves, hosiery, and protective wear for military, industrial, and medical workers. And you thought I was just going to send you pictures of kittens tossing a ball of yarn. This is YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. I'm Kevin Daum, and each week I bring you insights from the world's top executives of YPO, all made possible with grants from Gazelle's Growth Institute, www.growthinstitute.com. YPO member Eric Perlinger knows how to spin a profitable yarn, literally. When Eric joined Filspect as the president in November of 2015, he brought along more than 20 years of diverse manufacturing experience and a commitment to excellence. A master communicator with the ability to speak four different languages, including French, English, Spanish, and German, Eric is inspiring the whole company of Filspect to achieve profitability and success. Today, Filspect is a world-leading spinner of technical high-performance yarns. Since 1954, the company has been an integrated manufacturer, from spinning and finishing cotton and polyester fabric for bedding and for shirt and dress fabrics. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
I understand you are quite the spinner of yarns.
Exactly. That's what we do.
Good, because we love a good yarn. So, no, in reality, you're in the textile business.
Exactly. And we are literally yarn spinners. So yeah. What we do is we create yarn from short staple or long staple fibers.
But not just yarn like we're thinking of. My mother's a weaver and, you know, she weaves us pillows and winds her own yarn. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about high performance products, things that go into pretty much everything, clothing, industrial fabrics.
Yarns are the building blocks of everything of any fabric that's either knit or woven. It's interesting, when I tell people that I'm in the yarn business, they assume that I sell those big balls of yarn that grandma knits into a pair of slippers.
That the kiddie
plays with. Exactly, right. Where you have those great internet pictures. That's not actually what we do. We spin yarns that get woven into any type of fabric. The yarn is the building block.
But you're not focused on the commodity side, right?
This is not at all.
So it's a niche business. How does it work with your customers?
So what we try to do is build long-term relationships with our customers. And I like to tell our clients that we're kind of an extension of their R&D department. So what we try to do is gather some market information to invent new products or to combine new fibers. And then we go see them and go, look, you know, we think that there's an opportunity for you to be a first mover in this space. And we have invented something, or we're working on something, or we'd like to work with you on something to invent a yarn to give you that advantage.
Isn't that quite limiting? I mean, if you develop something and you're taking it out to clients, does that create a problem if you have, let's say, two clients in the same space? How do you decide which one you're going to bring it to?
Well, and that's part of the relationship. You know, we put NDAs in place with our clients, and we really go to the dance with who brought us. I think that's an important thing in partnership. You can't sell to everyone. We're not in a commodity business. We're not on a spot price type of business. So what we try to do is build relationships and add value to our clients.
And you're manufacturing in North America, right?
We are. We have a factory in Sherbrooke, Quebec, and we have a factory in Ellerbee, North Carolina.
Is it kept separate, the two parts of the company? Do you actually bring them together culturally?
Yeah, and that's the big part of the change that we're doing right now. Both companies were kind of run separately, and now we are putting together best practices. I took my plant manager from Sherbrooke, made him a vice president, made him responsible for the Ellerbee plant, because we want our clients and our employees to have the same experience if it comes out of one factory or comes out of the other, and that's very important. The hard thing is to mix the two cultures together, but that comes through proximity and dialogue, and that's part of the job that I have to do to make sure that everyone is aligned.
Why do you choose to have it in both places? Are there advantages, disadvantages?
Absolutely. So our original company is based in Sherbrooke, and we decided to acquire a company in the United States, specifically in North Carolina. The advantage of being able to manufacture in Canada is that Canada has some very interesting and sophisticated R&D tax credits. So for us, we can do a lot of research and development north of the border. In the United States, there's other advantages. If you want to sell to the military or anything that has a Berry Amendment component, you have to be a U.S. manufacturer. Also, we sell product in the CAFTA zone, which allows a yarn that's spun in the United States to be transformed in CAFTA nation in the Caribbean, like Salvador, and then come back in the United States tax-free. Canada is not a signatory to that agreement. So this allows us to service our clients on both sides of the border and gives us a truly North American opportunity.
Now, there's a lot of talk about manufacturing being difficult in the U.S., particularly in the textile industry. I mean, so much of that has gone offshore to Asia, and yet you're able to do it. Is that because you're in that niche market, in that premium market?
Clearly for us, being in a specialty niche is important. We wouldn't be able to be competitive on a lot of commodity products. So that's why, you know, price is not our sandbox. Value is our sandbox. So I like to tell people that we're an engineering company that works in yarn. But I don't think necessarily that precludes a commodity manufacturer to be in North America. I think what we have to do is concentrate a lot better on how to skin the cat. Problem in North America is that we didn't really invest as we should have in equipment in the past generations, and we didn't really treat our labor in an enlightened way. But I think we can be competitive. You know, we spin yarns that go to make socks that are sold in retailers in the United States, and those socks get knitted in the United States also. So there's a niche there, but you really have to focus on the management of your operation.
Is there becoming more parity with textiles? China's prices have risen, Vietnam's prices have risen.
Clearly that's an effect. Another effect is there's some very strong Buy American or Buy North American. So I don't think retailers only want to sell product that come from offshore. So that's
the price has dropped overall so much that a few cents don't really matter.
Right. And there's other things that come into play, like shipping from Asia is problematic, especially if you're selling something that's seasonal. If your stuff is stuck on the water and you can't get it in for a season, that becomes also a factor. And your cash flow being tied also becomes a factor. You know, you can't be good at everything, but I think in North America, there's definitely a place for specialty manufacturers, for sure. I like to say they still build cars in Germany, right? It's not because their labor force is the cheapest. It's actually one of the most expensive with all the benefits.
They use a lot less labor. I was at the BMW plant recently, and it's a large percentage of robots.
Right, but they decided to go with robots and keep their employees and not decide to forego the technology and have their products manufactured at the cheapest price. So I think that becomes part of your manufacturing and your quality game. And also, people don't always buy the cheapest product. Sometimes you want to pay more for value, and that's another thing.
What have you figured out about innovation that most executives miss?
Innovation comes from everywhere. I'm a big believer in serendipity. So with innovation, when you try to do that in a vacuum or with an R&D team, you're going to get something that's a little canned. And I think with innovation, the more you can open it up and the more people that can be involved in the input of it, I think that's where we get the most brilliant ideas.
Eric, it's time for our rapid fire questions. What is your favorite question to ask when you meet someone new?
So I'm fascinated with what people do all day long. So that's the first thing. I want to know what you do all day.
Name three of your personal core values.
Well, for me, honor is very important, and honest. Politeness is very important. Politeness really means I see you.
Who's had the greatest impact on you as a leader?
I'd say my father, as an example of what I'd not necessarily wanted to be as a leader and as a manager. For me, I was fascinated. I thought there was another way to do things, and I love the man, and he did wonderful things in his life. But I saw that as creating a necessity to build my own way and my own path.
What is your favorite business book?
Five Dysfunctions of the Team is definitely my favorite business book.
What are you reading right now?
Making It in America.
What is the one leadership trait that brings success?
Lightness and passion.
What is the one leadership trait that kills success?
Greed.
Name one daily behavior that will help a leader grow.
It might sound a little strange, but I think saying hello. If more of us went around and said hello to everyone in the morning, we would get a lot more intelligence on our business, and it would be easier for everyone to row in the same direction.
Name one trait that makes an employee valuable.
Passion.
What's your strangest daily habit?
I have a particular life, and I'm not in one place. I spend a lot of time in my car, and my daily habit is I always have an audiobook going on. I spend a lot of time reading behind the wheel.
What's the best way to show employees appreciation?
Listening to them, truly listening to them. I think it goes back to the idea of politeness and seeing the people that are there working with you.
Well, thanks for letting us listen to you today, Eric. We really appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Gazelle's Growth Institute for underwriting this program. Learn more at growthinstitute.com. Join me next week when I interview YPO member Asa Kosak of GC Aesthetics. She will share her success for making women look beautiful through healthy means. I'm Kevin Dom, and you're listening to the YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. To learn more about YPO, please visit www.ypo.org.